So tonight we're going to discuss the topic of Chalav Yisrael, Chalav Stam. We saw the Makoros, some of the basics of the Mishnah already tells us at the beginning that, you know, we're really not supposed to eat Chalav, Shenichlav, Oved Kochav. And Vein Yisrael Roa, the Mishnah tells us in Avodah Zarah, Lamed Hayam Bet, that really you should not ever drink milk that was milked by a non-Jew unless a Jew was nearby to watch the milking. And this has really seemed to be a pretty standard Mishnah, halacha l'maisa. So generally, when you have pshat in the Mishnah, we don't paskin otherwise. That seems to be, you know, general derech pesach. And that really seemed to be the mainstream opinion throughout the Jewish history until we see the pre-chadash. And then Rav Moshe kind of shift that. So we saw over the Chavruta time a little bit some of the main makoros, the Gemaras in Avodah Zarah, and some of the sugyos in the Rishonim and the Tor Beit Yosef about how this all applies. And I don't know if anyone saw through it, but the pre-chadash is really a very, very long but important piece where he discusses this at length, and a lot of the kulot that apply today are really not only based off of Moshe, but this tshuva of the pre-chadash. The reason why I specifically chose to do this tshuva today is because last Friday, Rav David Feinstein, Rav Moshe's successor, son, and, you know, he really his prodigy and his son, who followed him as the Rosh Shiva and MTJ, and was really considered the Posek Hador in America. That's where Rav Yashiv himself said that, particularly in the Agudas Yisrael world, for sure. And that's why I chose specifically this week to deal with the tshuva from the Masorah of Mishpacha Feinstein, from Rav Moshe, partially Li'uli Nishmat, Rav David, who, you know, they just got up from sitting Shiva from him really now, who was Niftar last Erev Shabbos. So Rav Moshe was born on Zayin Adar, right, the day that Moshe Rabbeinu was born and Niftar, in 1895, on March 3rd, and he passed away in March 23rd, 1986. He was born in Uzdan Minsk in Belarus to his father, Rav David, who his son, who was just Niftar, was named after his father. Rav David also happened to be his main Rebbe and was a direct descendant of the Gruz brother. I believe his name was Rav Avraham, who was known as the brother of the Gra. I could be wrong on that, not sure right now off the top of my head. And his mother was a direct descendant of the Shlach HaKadosh, so he really came. He was born into a rabbinic family. His father was a well-known Rav in Europe. And that was really, you know, he was Niftar in New York City, having come later to America, as we'll see. Rav Moshe, most famously, is often known for his shoot, Igros Moshe, which I'm sure many of you have heard of before. But Rav Moshe himself, already in his lifetime, lamented that the Igros Moshe was so popular and famous, particularly because he had another work called the Dibros Moshe, and that was a much more, I don't know, I know you have the Igros Moshe, I don't know if there's volumes of the Dibros Moshe, but the Dibros Moshe were Rav Moshe's shirin that he gave in MTJ, his shirei Torah, his iunim, his pilpul, his lamdus. And Rav Moshe, he lamented, he said, I spend all week preparing to give shir klali, to give shir in the sugya that we're learning in iun. And the tshuvos in the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe himself said this, I would write the tshuvos with one hand in between Mincha Marav, right? Mincha is called for 4:20, Marav was at 4:04, at 5, so in the 15-20 minutes between Mincha Marav, I would just write tshuvos to the questions I was asked, so I don't get why everyone knows me for these short tshuvos, which were like not a big deal. Anyone who's ever read an Igros Moshe knows they really were a big deal. These are, when we talk about tshuvos of the 20th century, some of the, you know, it's one of the most famous, if not the most important, shailos and tshuvos svarim of the century, and really considered one of the Gedolei Achronim when it comes to halacha. And we have the Darash Moshe on Chumash, and we have other svarim by now have come out, the Kol Re'eim al Torah, as well as on the Mo'adim. And there's other svarim that have been published of his halachot, I believe it's called Masoras Moshe, that takes his halachot, all of his tshuvot, his psakim, and order it al pi Seder Shulchan Aruch. He was really the Posek Ador in America following Rav Henkin, after Rav Henkin was Nifter. Okay, Rav Moshe, besides for studying under his father, he also learned in Slutsk and Shlov in Europe, and then he became the Rav of Luban in Russia. He became the Rav while he was still single, and they say that the woman in the community used to rotate and make him food, and only after Rav Moshe was married and his wife moved in when he became the Rav and he married, his wife tried the food of the woman in the community and his wife spat out the food. It was like, this food's absolutely disgusting. And Rav Moshe and his Aneva never ever said anything. The woman thought they were making Rav Moshe delicious home-cooked meals as the community rabbi, and ended up being the meals were really absolutely terrible and disgusting. But he never, apparently he never complained. That's just an interesting aside. In 1937, Rav Moshe escaped Russia and made his way to America. When he escaped Russia, he had written, already in Russia, he'd written Chidushei Torah on Talmud Yerushalmi. He had Chidushim all on Sefer, on on the Yerushalmi Torah, Talmud, sorry. And he, but before he left, he bought a fancy leather briefcase to put his documents in, so he's to safeguard them on his trip. They were stolen at a train station, so we don't have his chidushim. And Rav Moshe Lemed, he said, the guy stole my fancy leather briefcase because he assumed I was a wealthy businessman, and then it was like business, you know, business documents or cash. In the end, he probably just threw out the paper and sold my briefcase elsewhere. And he lamented, I should have gotten, you know, some cheap little folder. No one would have stolen it. And he, his entire life, he was very upset about it. He also left behind, he writes about this in a few places, his Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. He couldn't bring both his Rashi Tefillin and his Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. So he left his Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin in Russia. And he has a wonderful tshuva. I believe in Aruch Chaim Chelek Dalet, I don't remember exactly how that man, but it's tshuva right now, where he writes how when he came to America, there were no Mahadran good quality sofers. So he never got new Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. He said Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, Rav Moshe held very strongly, you should have. But he said, you know, it's not worth having, you know, second quality, you know, lower quality Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. If I'm going to have, I need to have really top quality because it's a chumrah, really that he wanted to keep. So he has a beautiful tshuva where he writes he finally found a reputable sofer and got himself Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, and how emotional that was for him. It was kind of like a coming full circle. Really interesting idea. And then when he ended up in New York, he was the Rosh Shiva of MTJ, where later on, they opened up in the Lower East Side. Later on, they opened up a branch in Staten Island that was headed by his son, Rav Ruvain. And Rav David, his son, followed him. And MTJ in New York City. He was also the president of the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, as well as the chairman of the Vad Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah for the Aguda in America, and really overseas as well. He really was the dominant main figure in America. Today as well, many, many communities, Halacha L'maisa, almost every, you know, your average community in America views Pesukei Rav Moshe as binding. That really is the final word. I know I was speaking to Rav Yonason Sachs once on the about a very interesting and complex sugya, and he himself is a direct descendant of the Har Tzvi and the Rosh Hashiva now of Lander, student of Rav Soloveitchik. And I asked him about a position of his grandfather, his great grandfather, the Har Tzvi, and whether or not he paskins like it. And he looked at me and he said, no, I'm like a rabbi of a shul in Passaic, like we paskin like Rav Moshe. And it was just an interesting discussion because I thought he was really going to be machbid for his great grandfather's position. But he said, no, how could I paskin against Rav Moshe when I'm dealing with my community in America? And so that was just an interesting aside. Really, Rav Moshe was the major posek ador in America and the leading figure. So tonight we're going to look at what arguably is one of his more famous tshuvot. He's written about it in Chelek Aleph and Yoredeya. There are three tshuvot about it in Chelek Bet. There's a tshuva about it in Chelek Gimel. There's a tshuva about it. Rav Moshe's written about it a lot. And as we mentioned last week in our shir on Hadlakas Ner Rosh Shabbos, B'Shem Rav David Yosef, that whenever a Rav writes about a specific topic time after time, that's generally a sign that this is something they believe in very strongly and that they're willing to push for. And that Rav Moshe, by far he's written more than anything else on the amount of tshuvos Rav Moshe's written about Machitza are endless. But on Chalav Yisrael, he has at least five tshuvot in the Igros Moshe. There might be more that I'm not aware of that he really discusses. So let's try and see inside what Rav Moshe's novel opinion was and how that really applies. So Rav Moshe opens off, we're starting now in the tshuva in Chelek Aleph, really the first tshuva we discussed in Yoredeya Siman Mem Zayin. And Be'inyan Chalav Companies, I always find it very interesting and funny. Rav Moshe, he always transliterates the English word. So you see how he doesn't write like, you know, in modern Hebrew, like Chalav HaMif'al, like the factory, or HaChevra, the modern Hebrew word for companies. No, he writes companies. He also is very makbid to write the Metziah, so like Rav Moshe's tshuva about umbrellas, he explains how an umbrella works. Okay? Because if you're looking 200 years, you have no idea what an umbrella is, the tshuva is irrelevant. So he writes specifically using, quote-unquote, the English words, and B, he also generally is makbid to write the metzias for future use, because, you know, if we're speaking English, sometimes it's really confusing, though, because he transliterates, you have absolutely no idea that says companies. When you look at it the first time, you're just like, that is a lot of random letters that don't belong together. And then it's like, oh, no, that says companies. Okay, I get it. So Rav Moshe does that a lot. It's always brings a smile to my face because I find it funny, but it's an interesting aside. So Rav Moshe opens off. He says, regarding the milk that's made by the companies in our country, right, in America, he says there is federal government, there's pikuach memshalti, there is government oversight, okay? So how does that apply, right? It's not the same case when you had your neighbor Vladimir sitting there milking his cow in Russia, or you had Mohammed milking his cow in Eretz Yisrael, and you bought the milk from your neighborly farm. Here we're talking about companies, huge companies, multi-million, billion-dollar industries where they are selling milk, and there is FDA, there is government oversight. How does that apply? What is the role that that's going to have? How does that shift our understanding? Halacha l'maisa. Right? He says there's government oversight, and if the imi arvu chalav behematzmea, if they mix non-kosher milk inside of it, then they're going to be shut down. The government's going to shut them down, right? The law is in America. A stam milk, if it just says milk and it does not specify, the law on the books in America is that must be cow's milk. Same thing with eggs. In America, a plain egg, if they don't use specify, this is an ostrich egg. This is a, I don't know, what other eggs do people, turtle eggs, whatever, okay? Neither do ostrich eggs. I'm just saying, stam, the word egg in America, means chicken egg. Stam, the word milk in America, means cow milk. That is the law. If it's going to be goat milk, if it's going to be an ostrich egg, you can't say egg, you can't say milk. You need to specify, this is sheep milk, this is goat milk, this is camel milk, this is pig milk, etc. So he says, no, I assume because of the law, they're not going to want to mix in the other animals' milk because that's against the law. They're going to lose their business. They're going to get shut down. So for them, vadai mirte, right? There's this concept of mirte that it's going to be, there's fear, right? There's this reason for them. We assume they're not going to want to do it because it's not in their best interest, right? We were afraid historically that they were going to mix it because that's what they want to, right? He has a cow, he has a camel, can get milk from both of them, he'll mix it, he'll sell it, great. Here, they don't have a benefit of mixing it because then they're going to get shut down. They're going to get slapped with a government fine. How on earth is that going to, you know, how does that affect the halacha? And so he says, because of this, yesh tam gadol lahatir af belo shitat pri chadash. Right? Because of this concept of government oversight, the concept that there is a government body that checks the factories, that ensures that this is 100% pure cow's milk. So I'm going to assume that the company is not going to mess around. They're not going to, you know, mix the milks under the table, etc. Stick in some trafe milk from their camels or their pigs. Because they only stand to lose. And he says this is without the opinion of the Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash has a very, very groundbreaking opinion where he says that in a era or a place where there is no reason, where you know for a fact they're not going to mix in other milk, then even Chalav Stam is mutter. So what's going to be the example? He says, they only have cows, right? There's no camels, there's no pigs, there's only kosher animals on this farm. So where is he going to get the treif milk from? Or, the Pri Chadash also says, this is a Metzias thing, camels and pigs, will they give you treif milk? Camels and pigs give very little milk. It's not very cost efficient. If you want to buy camel milk or pig milk, it's very expensive because one pig gives off very little milk. Whereas in a cow, the average cow is milked about 4 times a day because they just give off so much milk. They produce significant copious amounts of milk. So it's not profitable for me to mix in camel milk or pig milk or other non-kosher milks for one of these two reasons. Either I just don't have them or it's more expensive. So clearly why would I ever mix my camel milk and my cow milk? Because my camel milk's more expensive. I'm better off selling it on the side. So the Pri Chadash says, because of those reasons, I have no reason to, I don't need to be machmir because there's no reason for them to ever do it. Rav Moshe says, without that, without even saying that, we could just say, because of the FDA oversight, then we don't need it. This is very interesting. The OU claims ardently that they're not makel because of Rav Moshe. They say their kula is based off the Pri Chadash. What's the nafka mina between Rav Moshe and the Pri Chadash? Anyone have any ideas? Came up twice in the past decade in groundbreaking cases. Twice in the past decade, the United States government faced a shutdown due to budget failure, or failure to agree upon a budget. What happens when there is a government shutdown? Then some of the government agencies are temporarily on furlough and are not working. So what's going to be the case if now I know for a fact the FDA is not working? They're not going to check the factories because they don't have a budget. They're not getting paid. So if I hold like Rav Moshe, the minute the FDA is on furlough, all that milk is treif. But if I hold like the Pri Chadash, then I can say, well, because of this, they have no reason to mix it because the other milk is more expensive. The other milk is, they only sell cow milk. What, they're going to all of a sudden import all this pig milk? That doesn't make sense. It's not Metzias, right? They would never do that. So because of the Pri Chadash, that's how the OU Paskins, they said even in the times of the government shutdown in 2013 and 2018-19, the government shutdowns did not affect the kashrus of the milk based on the OU. Okay? That's what Rav Moshe says. Really, it's a din in the FDA. It has nothing to do with the Pri Chadash's opinion, that's kind of, it's even more than that. Rav Moshe then goes further. He brings Tosfot and Yevamos, and he explains a bunch of other cases, not really going to go into it due to time so much, where he really comes and says that there's certain things we require Eidos for. But there's a type of Eidos where I need to see 100% that it happened. Right? Such as at a wedding. If I hear the chassan say to the kala, Hare at nekudesh li betabat zu, I kedat Moshe b'Yisrael, I hear him say it, and then I blink or I sneeze, and I miss the moment, but then 2 minutes later I see, oh hey, she's wearing the ring. I can assume that he gave her the ring. Or if I walk in, I see a guy walk out of a room with a bloody dagger, and there's a dead body on the floor. I can assume that he's the murderer. But al pi halacha, in both cases, that's going to be a problem. This is a great tshuva. My Roshiva, Rav Yaakovson, told us when we were learning sugyos in Bava Metzia, he mentioned this, Agav, that they actually had a video, a case came up. They took a video of the wedding. It was earlier on. The chassan and kala were sitting during Sheva Brachos. They have nothing to do, right? Sheva Brachos, they're sitting, right? They're watching their wedding, right? They forgot what happened. It was less than a week ago. And then all of a sudden, they see the Eidim were not watching during the Shas Mesiras and Devas. The video, they were clearly like looking at the shmorg on the side, like, oh, there's some good carving station. Okay? So the case went to Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe Paskin, we know 100% based on the video, they weren't looking. And Rav Moshe said, come to my office. He called the couple into his office with two other people. He remarried them on the spot. Because they had Eidos. There are certain things that we need 100% Eidos for. Right? Such as murder, such as Kiddushin. But there are other situations where we could say, what? I don't know if they were told. It was Rav Moshe said, like, don't tell anyone. It was very hush hush, and they.
Can you see from the video that tons of other people are watching?
The Seder, but we generally are makbid because if you include everyone else that's watching for Eidos, then all the Eidos is pasul. Why? Their father, their cousins, their brother, all these people are pasul Eidos. They're mitzaref. Correct, but their mitzaref is one kat of Eidim. Not a different sugya. Okay. No, it's a really long sugya, and Ada's not going into it now. But no, they are. But he's not, but that's why most Masadri Kiddushin today are makbid. When the Eidim come up, they say, "Are you related to either of the Chassan or the Kala?" No, and they say the Chassan says verbally. I said this at our wedding. Atem Eidai Lima'et Kol Shar Anashim Kan. You two are the only Eidim. Everyone else here is Pasul Eidus. I don't want anyone. You are the only two Eidim here. Because otherwise you have people that are apostle Eidos. Difference, not for now, but that's everything. So Rav Moshe says, there's some types of Eidos where you really need to see it. There's other types of Eidos where we don't really need to see it. Such as Tfilas Hager, right? The whole sugya. You have a woman who wants to convert. So the three Rebbeim are standing there in the mikveh, but they watch her tovel? No, that's crazy. That's mamish ridiculous. Okay? That's really ridiculous. Or sugyos in, right? Eidei Yichud at a wedding. What do you really need to see in Eidei Yichud? There are certain things that if you see, that's really, really usher. You can't watch certain things, right? Okay, that's still getting the end of the first parak in Makos. Okay, right? You don't need to see the Maisa's Nus for a woman to be cheating on her husband. But the minute you see, oh, wait, Reuven and Rachel were mityache together, and, you know, they have a long text conversation together, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are certain things you don't need to actually see the Maisa. So Rav Moshe says, there are certain things that so long as we have a raya, we have a strong, hard proof on, that's good enough. So here, even if we don't have a Yisrael watching, we can rely on the fact that the government oversight is really kicking in, is working, extra hard, and that's something that's for sure true. And he says, right? Right, this is different for nefashos, okay, or for znus, or for kiddushin, because there you actually need to really see, right? There's different ramifications for them, and thus we could say here etzem hayedia he kariya, right? The knowledge is if you saw it, but that's not going to be true in other areas, right? We're mechalek between them, okay? Then Rav Moshe then continues, and this is really. Where we're going to see, it's actually fascinating. Rav Moshe writes over and over, as much as everyone quotes Rav Moshe, oh, Rav Moshe was making on Chalav Yisrael, that's kind of the area when we discuss, you know, tshuvos that are often quoted partially or not 100%. Rav Moshe writes in every single one of his tshuvot, and you'll see, I put on the back of the Makoro sheet, they found a handwritten letter from Rav Moshe where he stresses this even more so, where Rav Moshe writes at the end, and this is what I wanted to really kind of stress, it's fascinating. Rav Moshe writes, really, even though chalav, right? L'chein v'chalav she'asru rak b'chel bo'akum, ain't Yisrael, right? They asked milk that was milk by a non-Jew and a Jew wasn't there, right? We could be makel when a Yisrael knows for a fact, 100%, because that's called a raya, as we said. But if, because we know that if they mix the milk, they're going to be punished. They're going to accept the knas. They're not going to want to do that. And thus, they have no reason to do it because they don't want to, they're not willing to accept the fine. Okay, Rav Moshe, in the next tshuva, Namcher, I didn't bring it to you on the Makoro sheet, he gets a question regarding this tshuva, and he publishes an answer. The question was, Rav Moshe, your tshuva is brilliant, except what? The fine, what's the fine for mixing milk in America, at least when the year this was published in Tavshin Yud Dalet, so that was 70 years ago? 60 years ago? 65 years, 66 years ago? So, 65, 64 years ago. So Rav Moshe says, you asked me a question that Shachli Jew Mepakira Shilton, right? There's a government, one of the watchers who checks the Sha'onish Alzehu Rak Me'asurim V'chamisha Ad Me'adolar. Wait, I don't get it. We're going to say, oh, there's this crazy fine. It's a $25 to $100 fine, right? Speeding is more expensive than mixing milk. So Rav Moshe then says, well, maybe that's true, but you're not going to want to constantly be paying the fines until they shut you down, or you're going to have to bribe someone to get out of paying the fine. But he says, you might be worried about a bribe that happens in a small company, right? You bribe off the guy who's, you know, checking you. But now you have a company with hundreds of workers, with hundreds of farmers, and people at every stage. What, you're going to bribe every single person? Don't tell them that we mix the camel's milk with the cow's milk. That's just ridiculous. It's not going to happen. So Rav Moshe says, even though the fine at the time, I didn't check. I don't know what the current FDA fine is for mixing milk or misbranding milk, to be honest. I have no idea. But at least in the time, you know, 65 years ago, it was $25 to $100. So Rav Moshe says, I understand that, but you're not going to be willing to take that risk of that fine happening once a week, every day, until it gets out of control and they just shut you down. You're not going to take that risk. Once you're caught, you're going to kind of, okay, we got caught, let's kind of play it safe because they're going to check on us extra now. Or he says, people bribe to get out, but that's, when you're dealing with such a big company, a bribe is not so shayach. Hold on to your questions till after, just because we're short on time. Okay, Rav Moshe then continues. Right, this is just going back to the original tshuva. He then says, right, l'kuli alma ein tam l'chlok b'zeh, right, l'kuli alma halacha l'maisa, this is 100%, this works. 100% chalav stam, at least in America, totally mutter, no question asked, it's totally fine. Okay, but then he says, right, ulachen harotel smoch ulakel, whoever wants to be mekel based on this, to rely on my opinion to be mekel, yesh lo tam gadol v'rashai. Right, there's a lot of what to rely on, and for sure you could rely on what I'm saying to Mikael. But then he says, right, and then he says, right, this it seems to be that Rov Bnei Adam Shomrei Torah are Mikael on this, okay, aval, but rather Mikol Makom Lebali Nefesh, whoever, someone who is strict regarding their soul, Mina Ra'ui LaHachmir VeEin Bazeh Mishum Yora, really anyone who cares about, you know, their religious growth, who views themselves, you know, as a Bal Nefesh, then they really should be Machmir. This is not called Yora. This is not going to be considered as showing off. It's not like you're flexing. Oh, look, I'm so machmir. I don't eat, you know, that chal of Yisrael. Oh, I'm so machmir. I only eat X. Oh, I'm so chumra. I'm so machmir. I only do Y. Right? You're showing off your chumras, this concept of yura. You're trying to show that you're better than people. So most of that doesn't apply here. Why? Because v'chein ani noeg, he says, right? It's not going to apply here because me'ikar adin, you really can only eat chal of Yisrael. So this is a kula. By me'ikar adin, you could only eat chal of Yisrael. So it's not going to be considered yura because you're not being somech on a kula. You're holding like me'ikar adin. But he says, v'chein, v'kach, ani noeg lachmir la'atzmi. Rav Moshe himself, there's a lot of argument. Well, did Rav Moshe really hold like this or not? He writes explicitly, I personally am achmir. I'm not going to drink this. Aval misha rotze la'kel, hu ose kedina ve'en lach shivo kemizalza b'yisorin. Right, Rav Moshe says, anyone who wants to be me'ikal, for sure can be Mekel, and we, you know, you shouldn't make fun of him. Oh, you're such a Mekel, you know, you're so off the derech, right? You're basically reformed because you drink, you know, you drink chalav stam in America. Rav Moshe says, you know, that's not true. You shouldn't, you know, we don't go calling them names, whatever, you know, I don't know if it's today, if the insult's like reform, open orthodox, wherever we hold on the spectrum, right? Rav Moshe says, this is Mikra Adin, but really we should be Machmir. Okay, and then he has a discussion whether or not, you know, if you do this, if you need to be Machmir for a nether. But then he continues and he says this over and over, right, in his next tshuva, right, he writes, for sure, right, what else did we want to say here? Okay, he writes, V'lachain, right, at the end of the next shuvah, Memchet, V'lachain shuvatir, Rishonah, Sheesh tam gadol la'mekel. Even though we said earlier, there's a lot of reasons to be mekel, and it's nachon etzbar, V'adai l'bal nefesh, mina ro'oi la'achmir, V'ein b'zeh mishum yorai. He writes again, yes, mikra din, we can be mekel. or we can be Mekel Kenegedik or Din of the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, but we really should be Machmir on this very fascinating sugi by Rav Moshe. You know, he says over and over, I'm Mekel, you can be Somech on my Kula. But he does not leave it there. He says over and over how Machmir one should be about this. Okay, and then also at the end of, in Memtet, he says this again. Right? Really, you can't be makel with this company-based milk, and you really, that's the halacha. Really, you should be machmir. But he then continues. Okay? And then he has a discussion about whether or not, what if you mixed, right? What if you mix the chal of Yisrael and the chal of Stam? Are we going to be makel or not, right? If you're going to have someone who's machmir, how does that apply? If it's a Jewish-owned farm, not a Jewish-owned farm, that's definitely something he discusses. And then I wanted to see in Chelek Bet, really, he takes this a step further. In Chelek Bet, in Shuva Lamed Chet, he discusses three sugyos that he previously writes about. And this here of Moshe opens up the first order of the Shuvas about our sugya. And he writes, "Bedavar chalav companies, b'minyatir." Right, regarding the chalav milk of our companies, shebiardi, sheleika iser chalav shechalav akum ve'in yisoro. There's no iser. It's not usser. It's not usser. Don't tell me it's usser. Rav Moshe says, "Avam mikom akom yina ruil lebalei nefesh achmir." Really, one should be machmir. Shemitam zev vaday ruil leminalei yeshivot aktanot. And as a result, because really we should be machmir, whoever is right, you're running a elementary school, a yeshiva ktana, a middle school, a high school, right? You run a school, and should I be somech on Chal of Stam or Chal of Yisrael? That's going to be a ramification of real money, right? I know of numerous yeshivot who they had discussion. They had a whole staff meeting, and they said, when we're discussing our kashrut standards, I don't know what Amudim's kashrut standards are, okay? But when we sit down to discuss what are the standards of the food that we bring in, I can tell you for a fact, when you go to Rami Levi, you go or order food. If you order the Rav Landau chicken, it's going to cost you X per kilo. If you order the most basic Rabbanut's chicken, it's going to be less than half the price. So now I'm going to have a question, how do I balance the Chumras versus Kasbei Tzibor? How far do I go when it comes to spending money from Kasbei Tzibor that could be used for other things? But to be machmir for kashrus. Do I get the Rav Machba chicken, or do I settle for something that's, you know, more middle ground? Do I go to one extreme of, like, this is really basic level kashrus? Two, this is top-notch kashrus? Do I go somewhere in the middle? These are really, really hard questions that much ink has been spilled upon. How much money, how much personal money, right? When you are going shopping, how much do you spend the extra 3 or 4 shekel to get the mahajan version as opposed to the non-mahajan version? That's a hard question. On a personal level, I don't think it's a hard question. On a tzibor question, I think that's a very different issue. When you're discussing, now we have an institution, and if we're ordering food for 100 kids a day, that's gonna, the extra 3 shekel per kilo of chicken, the extra 10 shekel, ends up multiplying incredibly over the course of the year. That's thousands of dollars difference between getting the chal of stam versus the chal of Yisrael. Okay, so Rav Moshe says, I understand that it's gonna cost more to get the chal of Yisrael. But regardless, I think that for the schools, we should dafka get only Chal of Yisrael, right? The afshu be yoker me'at, even though it's more expensive. Shelah yeshivot oleh usach gadol, right? But over the course of the year, it's going to be a lot more money for the yeshivas to spend, for the midrashah to get the higher level kashrus on the milk or the food in general. It's going to cost us more money. But Rav Moshe says, that is a good use of your money. Better to spend more in order to achieve that stand, you know, the higher kashrut standard, even though it's going to cost you more money. Right? And he says, this is true, even though, you know, over the yeshivas and seminaries and schools, they're always fundraising. They could always use more money. They're always struggling to, you know, to stay afloat. And he says, even so, this is something we should use our money for. Right? We should be machmir because we're not only dealing with, oh, are we makel, are we machmir, what's psak halacha? When we're dealing with institutions, we're dealing with schools, there's also chinuch involved. And when you send the message to the kids from elementary school, through high school, through yeshiva, through seminary, through whatever it is, when you're willing to tell your kids, when you're willing to tell your family, I'm willing to spend extra money for a higher level kashrus, then Rav Moshe says, that's called chinuch. You're educating your kids about the importance of halacha. Yes, there's those who say that maybe this is okay, that's okay. But Rav Moshe says, part of education, part of being a good mechanich, is expressing that there, you know, when we're, for kpedos and halacha, when it comes to Torah, we're willing to spend more. I'm willing to spend more to get the beautiful etrog than the, you know, debatably puzzle etrog. Right? You know, What is that a hole? Is that not a hole? Is it yavish? Is it not yavish? All the fun stuff is in there. Rav Moshe says part of chinuch is, right, this is why halachically, it's usher to give a kid, even though he's a katan, it's usher to give them a pasul etrog. I can't give a katan a pasul etrog. Why? Because chinuch, not going to that whole sugya there in chinuch, but you can't give someone something that's puzzle. You can't purposely feed your kid tray food, even though you're like, ah, he's a katan, right? He's 2 years old. So how does that all come together? It's a fascinating discussion, but Rav Moshe says part of paying more, even though that's going to deal with community funds or institution funds, that's something we need to do. And Rav Moshe then continues, right, you're going to teach the kids the importance of we're being makbid when it comes to Yisurim. Right, what we're trying to do is educate an entire generation about the beauty and truth of Torah. When anything comes to chinuch, when it's between, should I spend money on something that's educational or something that's not educational? Rav Moshe says, you spend the money on something that's educational. And spending more money when it comes to, you know, teaching the kids on what the importance is, right? I don't know, did you guys ever have a shiur of like what the Midrashah's standards and kashrus is and, you know, the pros and cons? Okay, so, you know, I assume, I would hope at least, when you had a shir that discussed the standards of kashrus for the Midrashah, I don't know what, I honestly have no idea what they do, they said, maybe, like Rav Moshe is saying here, we choose to be machmir here, yes, there's reasons to be makil, do we need to check every tzomen agidin and the chickens or not, what about the, you know, glat, not glat, Ashkenazim, Sephardim, etc., right, Menag America, like the Hungarians, etc., not getting into all these discussions now in the world of kashrus, but we would like to hope, Rav Moshe says, that we stress the educational point of maybe there's what to be somech on to not check every tzomen agidin. Maybe just to do mishush and not pticha, etc. When we open up to check the veins, etc., the sinews in the ankle, the foot of the chicken. But Rav Moshe would say, maybe we should stress, no, because there's a lot of what to be machmir on here, we want to stress educationally how important it is that we take kashrus seriously. And so Rav Moshe says, that's worth spending money on mitzad chinuch. But if you're living in the middle of nowhere, you live in Timbuktu, Alaska, you know, you can't get Chalav Yisrael, she'ain sham companies, mechalav she'Yisrael ro'o, you can't get Chalav Yisrael milk, it's almost impossible to get Chalav Yisrael. So Moshe says, right, on a personal level, if you're in the middle of nowhere, you can't get the Chalav Yisrael milk, for sure you shouldn't be machmer, make her a dinner. Moshe holds, for sure you can be somech on the kula, but really one should be machmir, institutions for sure should be machmir, Rav Moshe says, and then he says, if you're living in the middle of nowhere, maybe you really shouldn't. So people often quote this Rav Moshe, tshuva, that he's super makel, everyone should be makel, but Rav Moshe says over and over, in all four of these tshuva that we just saw, I didn't bring the chelek gimel honestly with me, to be honest, but I'm sure we could look it up after shir, that Rav Moshe constantly, every time he stresses the kula, he also says, but really, one should be machmir with themselves. I brought here a fascinating letter that came out, that they found a few years ago, in Rav Moshe's own handwriting. There is debate whether or not in MTJ they did have Chalav Yisrael or not. I don't know. People say in different generations the yeshiva actually had Chalav Stam, and some years they had Chalav Yisrael. Some people say, no, Rav Moshe held always the Achmir, Rav Moshe held always the Kula. Debates among different students, I don't actually know. I wasn't there. I wasn't alive when Rav Moshe was alive. Realistically speaking, so Rav Moshe has this letter here that he wrote in his hand. I brought you guys his handwriting just because it's fascinating, as well as also just the typed up copy because sometimes it's hard to read the handwriting. And Rav Moshe writes, right? It's the 5th of Mar Cheshvan, Tavshin Chav Dalet. So this is 9, 10 years after the original Tshuvot that we read, right? So whoever's where he's writing this letter to clearly knows about Rav Moshe's Tshuvot, right? It's 10 years later. He's clearly seen what was written in the Igros Moshe Chelek Aleph. He's also seen what's written in the Igros Moshe Chelek Bet. And Rav Moshe writes back to whoever the questioner was, when it comes to the milk of the companies, Avshe Yesh Tan Lagel, even though there's reasons to be makel, Vadai Shehu Rak B'Makom Sheh Leika Cholov Shehu Yisrael, Yisrael Shehu Tachat Ashkachot Rabim Yirei Hashem. Right? The only time Rav Moshe writes, and there's a lot of debate, is this letter authentic? Is it not authentic? People have said that the handwriting matches, the handwriting doesn't match. Well, it was never published in the Sforim, so maybe we don't add in letters. Not getting into, I guess, the academic realm of how we view letters of Poskim versus their own published works. That's an interesting question. But it's just fascinating to see what he writes here. He says, really, you should never be Mekel on Chalav Stam unless you really live in a place where you cannot get milk that was observed by a mashkiach who is Yirei Shemayim, who fears HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avam b'makom she'ika Chalav Yisrael, any place where you can get Chalav Yisrael, Shubashkacha, that's under Hashkacha, right? Such as, You know, in many, you know, we'll see in a minute what he says. Right? In any other case, so too with other cheese, you know, milk products. Sarich lachmir, you need to be machmir. V'kol shekein el shemate, okay? Especially in homes where people are makbid to keep kashrus, right? You shouldn't be making on this. And then he's to skip the last line and a half here. Bezel la'asig ma'chalei chalav b'ashkacha ki po, New York. Rav Moshe says, in a place where you can get Chalav Yisrael, such as New York. Rav Moshe is speaking about New York long before current, you know, New York as we know it. Right? This letter was written, you know, 30 years before I was born. Okay? So the situation for kashrus in the tri-state areas only got him better. Kavachomer Teretz Yisrael, where the kashrus, Baruch Hashem, there's even more to what to hold. Leika b'zeh shum dochak. Currently in New York, in 1964, he's writing this, there's no pressing needs. Kol ha'pachot yasigu ma'chalei chalav shevashkacha le'elu shenizarin. Okay? And everyone should go out and get things that are Chalav Yisrael. Rav Moshe really, as much as he says over and over that there is definitely Mikra Adin, there's what to be Mikra on because of the FDA approval, without even going to the Prichadash's idea of it's more expensive or it's harder to find or it's not available. Rav Moshe says 100% you could eat it, but he also stresses that really, Royim Mikol Makom Lahachmir Lebal Nefesh, one really should be Machmir, and institutions always should be Tarchinach. And as always, you know, what we're trying to do is try and understand fascinating opinions where Rav Moshe, at the end of the day, he paskins Halacha Lamaisa, that you really can't be Mikra. Okay? And Rav Rabinovich in Siach Nachum, he has a tshuva about Chalav Yisrael, and he basically says, Rav Moshe's Mekel, the OU's Mekel, why are you asking me? But realistically speaking, Rav Moshe himself, well, he says there's for sure room to be Mekel. Rav Moshe very much says we should ideally strive to keep higher level kashrus. We should always try to do the best we can to be machmir and kashrus, particularly for ourselves, and even more so when it comes to chinuch for our families, our children, our students. We want to try and, you know, raise the bar when it comes to our Yirat Shamayim, when it comes to, you know, you are what we eat, as we discussed in our shir a few weeks ago on why one should be keeping kosher, right? Maybe that's one of the ideas. We want to try and reflect what we eat, reflects our Yirat Shamayim, reflects our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And, you know, Rav Moshe says, really, 100% you can be makel on chalav companies because of the government oversight, but Roy Lachmir for a Baal Nefesh.